Okay, the first characteristic I'd like to cover here is that there's power when you have one God. Let's go to James chapter 2, verse 19. Thou believest there is one God, thou doest well. The devils also believe and tremble. See, the adversary is afraid that there's one God, but he's not afraid of a Trinity. See, there's no power in a Trinity, and you can't back down the adversary with a Trinity. If Jesus Christ was God, you know, then all the stuff he did, it was like, well, no big deal, you know, because he was God. Anybody, you know, if God could do that, you know, of course he can do anything. But because a man did it, that makes it something special. Let's go to the Gospel of John. See, if Jesus Christ was God, that makes the walk of Jesus Christ unattainable for us. It makes the walk of... Did I say that right? Okay. Yeah, it makes the walk of Jesus Christ unattainable for us if he was God. But because he's a man, we can do that. We can attain that. We can achieve that. In John chapter 14, verse 11, believe that I am in the Father and the Father in me, or else believe me for the very work's sake. Verily, verily, I say unto you, he that believeth on me, the works that I do shall he do also. And greater works than these shall he do, because I go unto my Father. You know, obviously it's impossible to do greater works than God. You know, if you believe in the Trinity, you have to throw this verse out, or you got to bury it, or you got to come up with some bizarre intellectual explanation for it that takes the power of God out of your walk. And whatsoever ye shall ask in my name, that will I do, that the Father may be glorified in the Son. Let's go to Luke chapter 2. You know, if Jesus Christ was God, then that makes Mary the mother of God, and that means they had baby God. Now, a lot of you guys are parents. Can you imagine changing God's diapers? I mean, well, if he was God, you know, it's like... Or, you know, can you imagine trying to put God to bed, you know, and it's like, okay, God, now it's 8 o'clock, it's your bedtime. Now, don't create light when we turn the lights out. I mean, you know, that's the, you got to think about this logically. He was a normal kid. You know, he ate and breathed. You know, it sounds ludicrous, like I'm just trying to be ludicrous on this, but there's a book that was written, I don't know when it was written, it's called The Book of Infancy, where somebody went through and they supposedly documented the childhood of Jesus Christ, and they write about how the kids were playing with animals, and they're making little animals out of clay, and the one little kid makes a horse, and the one Jesus Christ made supposedly came to life, and he made some birds, and they flew away and scared the other kid. I mean, people actually write books like that. So this stuff that I'm saying, you know, is not that ludicrous. But see, if you believe he's God, then you've got to start logically progressing down the line to bizarre things like that. And there's no power in that. Luke chapter 2, verse 51. And he went down with them and came to Nazareth, talking about Jesus Christ, and Jesus Christ was subject unto them, his parents. Can you imagine God subject unto Mary and Joseph? I can't. But if you believe the Trinity, then you got to somehow explain that away. I have a research paper that I'm going to have some of these available. I didn't bring enough for everybody to have one, but I brought enough for each fellowship to take one to their area, on historical background of the Trinity, and I'll make some of those available to people if they want them. Or you can call me and I can mail you another one or something. And that goes into this subject a lot deeper. And another thing is Jesus Christ was crucified. If you believe in the Trinity, then you have to believe God was crucified. I mean, what kind of power does our God have if he could be crucified? I wouldn't want to follow a God like that. I tell you, no thanks. You know, if your God gets crucified, what's going to happen to you? Woo! Next characteristic. Okay. First characteristic is that there was one God, not three. Second characteristic, manifestations. Let's go to 1 Corinthians. Oh, Acts 1:8. We'll go there first. I was looking through one of my research books. I've got this, I think it's Erdman's Handbook of Religions or something like that. And they, I think there's something like 6 trillion people in the world today, and supposedly 2 trillion of those people are Christians. And out of those 2 trillion, there's about 22 million that are in denominations that believe in speaking in tongues. And out of those, not all those people in those denominations even speak in tongues. And out of the ones that even believe in speaking in tongues and maybe operate, there's very few people that actually operate all 9 manifestations. Those few, those handful of people who operate all 9 like us are very precious to God. Your lives are very precious. We're a very valuable resource to God. But those out of those 2 trillion Christians, only a handful are operating the manifestations. The rest of them are missing a major component to the power of God. Without manifestations of the Spirit, you're just going out, you're just like natural man wandering out there. It's like going out in the world with a kick me sign, you know? And you don't know it's there, and it's just like, boom, you know? And something else, boom. You're just laying yourself open for attack. But with manifestations, you can be on the offensive and not the defensive. And we can back down the adversary daily. In Acts chapter 1, verse 8, Jesus Christ is telling his apostles here, "But ye shall lambano dunamis, receive power, when the gift of Holy Spirit is come upon you. Ye shall be witnesses unto me, both in Jerusalem, in all Judea, and in Samaria, and unto the uttermost part of the earth." And, of course, everybody always says that. I think I figured out where the uttermost part of the earth is. I was out in the hotel lobby, and they got this little brochure for the Outdoor Underwear Festival in Piqua. I figure any place that's going to have an outdoor underwear festival, that has to be the uttermost part of the world. It's out there. You can see it. Don't take my word for it. It's out there. But anyway... the witness is they operated manifestations. He got up on the day of Pentecost. They spoke in tongues. You know, they healed people. They operated 9 manifestations. That is a witness to God. You know, what kind of witness is it? If, you know, I guess it's a good witness if you do other things that the Word says. That's a good witness too. But the real witness, if you're operating 9 manifestations, then you're really kicking some butt spiritually. Let's go to 1 Corinthians 14:5. I remember it was 1973, October. I had hair halfway down my back. I was playing in a rock and roll band. I was 19 years old. A friend of mine, a fellow musician, had invited me over for this Christian fellowship. And I get there, and there was 2 individuals, Terry Tuttle and Gary Jensen, I believe, were their names. They were teaching the fellowship, and at the end of the fellowship, they had manifestations, speaking in tongues, and interpretation of tongues. When I heard that, it was like, yeah, I'll sign anything. You know, he said he could have sold me his car that night. I was so turned on. That's what Terry told me later. And I got so excited because I saw the power in God in operation. I'd grown up, I'd gone to a couple different denominations, and not seeing any power in the churches. So basically, I and my parents had sort of reached the idea that we were basically agnostic. We thought, well, maybe there's a God, but we're not sure. You know, and I really wasn't too excited about religion. But when I saw these gentlemen operating manifestations of the Spirit and teaching the Word and making sense out of it, I got excited. And that really turned me on. 1 Corinthians 14, verse 5. I would that ye all, doesn't say some, it says all. God's will is that all Christians speak in tongues. You know, as I showed you those statistics, only a fraction of them carry out God's will. And then he even wants us even more so to prophesy. He wants us to get into the other 9 manifestations too. We should become fully instructed. And verse 18, and the Apostle Paul said, I thank my God I speak in tongues more than ye all. He spoke in tongues more than any other individual in that whole Corinthian church. He worked it to the point where he really mastered it. He spoke in tongues, and that's how he was able to so well operate the other 8 manifestations, because he really worked that beginning one. Let's go back a chapter to chapter 12, verse 7. But the manifestation of the Spirit is given to every man to profit withal. There's that word profit again. Remember that from this morning? For to one prophet is given the word of wisdom, by the Spirit, the word of wisdom. For another prophet, the word of knowledge, by the same Spirit. For another prophet, faith, by the same Spirit. To another prophet, gifts of healing, by the same Spirit. And for another prophet, miracles, working of miracles. And for another prophet, I'm reading the more accurate translation instead of King James here. You get the gist of what I'm saying, though. And basically, there's nine. God sets forth nine here, and He wants us to do all nine. Because without it, you're missing one of the components of power. I originally was going to teach a whole lot more than five characteristics of the power of God, but then I realized that Reverend Schroyer only gave me 40 minutes, so to be decent in order, I shouldn't try to cover too much. So this is something you can work when you go home, is look, there's more components than just nine. Like, or the five I'm covering. Because, for instance, you need the Word. You know, the integrity of the Word. You need praying. Those are two I'm not covering in this teaching, but those are definitely there. Let's go to Romans chapter 12. Chapter 12, verse 1. I beseech you, therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, that you present your bodies a living sacrifice, holy and acceptable unto God, which is your reasonable service. And be not conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. I mean, here's a whole other thing, too. I'm not even including that in part of my teaching. I'm getting in, still working on manifestations, but that's obviously a whole other key that somebody could work, too. That you be transformed by the renewing of your mind, that you may prove what is that good and acceptable and perfect will of God. For I say through the grace given unto me to every man that is among you, not to think of himself more highly than he ought to think, but to think soberly according as God hath dealt to every man the measure of faith. Keep your finger here. Let's flip back to 2 Kings chapter 2, chapter 2, verse 9. And this is a section where the man of God, Elijah, J-A-H, is passing on his ministry to the man of God, Elisha, S-H-A. They sound similar, but the way to remember it is S comes after J, J comes before S, so Elijah came before Elisha. So if you want to keep your history straight. And chapter 2, verse 9, it came to pass when they were gone over that Elijah said to Elisha, ask what I shall do for thee before I be taken away from thee. And Elisha said, I pray thee, let a double portion of thy spirit be upon me. See, in the Old Testament, they only had part of the spirit. They never had the fullness of the spirit. Also, whenever they were given the spirit, it was given to them, it was fired up. They didn't have to speak in tongues to energize it the way we do. The Apostle Paul spoke in tongues more than y'all, and he energized his spirit to the point he operated it very efficaciously. But in the Old Testament, they were given to them just a portion of it, but it was given to them hot. When they operated, stuff happened. And Elijah said, I want twice as much. That's a good thing to want, you know. If you want to really, you know, seek to excel something, you know, seek to excel spiritually. You know, obviously, in our day and time, it's not available to get a double portion. In our day and time, we read back here in Romans chapter 12, according as God hath dealt to every man the measure of faith. See, we got the fullness of the Spirit that Jesus Christ had. In Colossians 3:11, you don't need to turn there. Well, no, let's go to John first. I do want you to turn to John. Now, keep your finger here in Romans. We're coming back. Gospel of John, chapter 3. Chapter 3, verse 34. See, in the Old Testament, it was meted out bit by bit. It was measured out. They would measure a certain portion out and put it on believers at various times. But here in verse 34, for he whom God hath sent speaketh the words of God, for God giveth not the Spirit by measure unto him. When Jesus Christ came, he got the full load, the whole nine yards, the whole ball of wax, and every other cliche you can think of. He got everything that was available. And what we got everything Jesus Christ had spiritually. That's what it's talking about here in chapter 12. According as God hath dealt to every man the measure of faith. we've got the full amount available. And it says, I was telling you before about Colossians 3:11. It says there that Christ is our all in all. That means everything that God was in Christ is in us. We have that same power spiritually. So taking that in mind, now we can look back at the first half of 12:3. For I say unto you, through the grace given unto me, to every man that is among you, not to think of himself more highly than he ought to think, but to think soberly, according to the second part of the verse there. Now, what's that talking about? See, what that's talking about is I don't get all puffed up and say, well, I've